Well, we are about to arrive at the season of winter. Last Thursday, we had a cold front sweep through the state. Nobody was swimming. Nobody was out getting a suntan. Nobody was having a barbecue that I could see. And so we are entering the winter season. And we know from the promise made in Genesis 8 that God has created the seasons, and He guarantees that they will exist as long as the earth exists. I grew up in a very distinctive four-season area in the state of Vermont. We were in a rural area, the site of many farms, farmland. We had a number of acres of land and could see on a clear day, 100 miles in several states, and it was just gorgeous scenery with a local mix of many maple trees and fir trees, and it had a four-season atmosphere. Spring was a time of revitalized energy. It was a time to be outside. There was new vegetation. So much running water, pristine water from melting snows. We would get 10 feet a year. And it was an opportunity for making maple syrup, which is something that we did. I can remember coming home from school, and I'd always have a tap that was drilled into one of the trees. It had a glass. It was filled with what looked like water. Tasted like sweet water. And that would be there every day for about a month. And later, as things dried out, it was a chance to play baseball or maybe golf on mountain courses. That was part of spring in Vermont. The warm days and the cool nights. The distinctive smell of grasses and flower and clover. Many years before, there would be a challenge in the spring. It was a time, of course, of responsibility, repairing the fences that kept animals in check. It was a time to start planning. And there was always a danger if winter lasted too long, then you'd have a short spring. You might not be able to get all the planning taken care of. If summer came too early, it could make planning difficult, and it could affect the future harvest. For us in the summer, it was a time when people developed their crops. It was hiking, fishing, whitewater rafting for some, picking blueberries, making jam from that. Summer included art shows and music, outdoor music festivals. In the years gone by, the big challenge was hot summers could bring on drought, could dry up springs, could be a threat to livestock. It could be something to be somewhat concerned about, or inclement weather, cooler weather in the summer. But other things included the challenge of warding off the wildlife, the raccoons, the deer, in fact, that would invade people's gardens. Skunks, raccoon, bear. When you go back in time, I can remember going through, discovering old cemeteries, miles away from nowhere, it seemed like, into the middle of nowhere, where family plots were, people in back of the 1800s, wiped out by diseases such as cholera and diphtheria. It was very, very intimidating, the diseases that could break out in those different rural areas. And so there was a challenge. There were blessings and there were challenges in every season there. Fall for us was a time of harvest. I can remember canning. I can remember apple cider making that, chasing the deer away from those trees. And then, of course, deer hunting season came, which was huge there. To me, I decided it was a counterfeit Feast of Tabernacles. But after the leaves were gone, there was the deer hunting. But there is no place like New England for resplendent, gorgeous color. The maple trees and full arrays of oranges and reds and yellows, just absolutely spectacular. I never got tired of seeing that time of year come around. And fall was not always easy in Vermont. Believe it or not, there was a threat of hurricanes. Even this last year, they had devastating floods from one specific hurricane and other major storms that have hit that area. It was a time to harvest in the times gone by, and it was critical to harvest successfully to have enough food to carry you through the winter and have enough seed left to be able to plant for the following year. And then winter would come. For me, winter was a time to be outside, pristine air, clear, crisp air. Hear the whistle of the wind in the pines, to ski, to be out on ice, ice skating. I have fond memories of that. Every season had its own special features. Years ago, it was far more difficult. Years ago, blizzards and storms could threaten to lock people down. There could be a loss of communication, freezing temperatures. It could wreak havoc with pipes. But for the people that lived hundreds of years ago, winter was used as a time to take inventory. It was an opportunity to learn from the year in order to plan for the next year. How much sheep fence would you need to have? How much other barbed wire? What was needed to maybe secure water sources, perhaps to explore for an additional spring to be able to provide what would be needed? There was a purpose to every season. And in the same way, life has its seasons. People start out as infants, quickly become teenagers and young adults. Some think they can, at that age, they can live forever. They get that car, get that freedom, get that date, work, lots of energy, bowling leagues, softball leagues, second jobs, accumulating maybe some special toys. And then there's sports and intramural activity at school and friends, and suddenly you're married, and then the next thing you know, the kids are getting older, and then you're busy with family and careers, and there's scouts and brownies and music lessons, martial arts lessons, and dance and ballet and school sports, intramural sports, and all the rest. And then before you know it, then you're in the empty nest years and menopause, and you start asking yourself, well, why did we ever get this big house to begin with? What are we doing with this yard that gets bigger every year? And it's just not fair. And then, why can't we drive at night? And then health ailments start. And then people have ailments that 50 years ago they never thought they'd have. And I'll never forget being at the Olive Garden when we had a gathering for Mrs. Lillian Sirks, one of the matriarchs, and she was laughing, and she says, how can I be 90 years of age? I can't believe what happened. You know, it just creeped up. I'm 90. I never thought this would happen. I never thought, when I was 15, it was announced that my mom would have a baby, a girl. And I thought, when she's 50, my age, I'll be 30. That's ridiculous. Our perspectives change. Somebody said, you know, the life is like you're born and then you start accelerating to the grave. And, yeah, my dad would say, you know, I don't know where the last 20 years went. My mom would write checks, and she'd forget and put down 1956 or something, and said, oh, wait a minute, no, that's wrong. And time, it seems to be immaterial, and it is to God. It can be to us, in a sense. But as one philosopher wrote, the cycles of nature reflect the cycles of human living. As there is a pattern to the rhythms of nature, so there is to the rhythms of our lives. And there are seasons to our lives. And we need to learn with humility and wisdom those different seasons, because they were designed by God. And God wants us to learn from each season that we go through. The season of youth is different than the season of middle age. And that's somewhat different than the older age. And there are blessings and advantages to each one. There are caveats, there are warnings, or things to be cautious about at each stage. And we can learn from that. But God wants us to get the best from all of those ages, from all of those experiences. And I think it's good, especially when we have a mortality moment, a reality moment like we've had with the special services that we've already celebrated, a celebration of life, memorial service for a man that lived to be 100, Mr. Oldroyd, who thought young, who got his driver's not license renewed. He was good till 106. And he would say, well, of course. It's in the mind. I mean, you can be dead at 10, Or you can be alive at 110. I mean, a lot of it is how we look at life. And it's important when we're rooted with the foundation of God that we take advantage of what God puts in front of us. We can learn from these different ages, these different seasons that God has given to us. Let's go over to Ecclesiastes, where we've already been today. Ecclesiastes chapter 3, and see a passage of Scripture that is very important. This was written by the wisest man in the world, the time King Solomon. And he was one that lived by experimentation, and he also had, at least for a significant part of his life, the Spirit of God, and he was able to write about life with a perspective that exceeds the depth of that of most other people. And he was inspired to say in Ecclesiastes 3 and verse 1, "To everything there is a season and a time to every purpose under heaven. A time to be born, a time to die, a time to plant, a time to pluck up that which is planted. A time to kill, mosquitoes, things like that. A time to heal, a time to break down, and a time to build up. Sometimes it's time to level a building and come up with something better. Time to weep, time to laugh, to mourn, and time to dance." All of us have experienced the ranges of emotions associated with all of these different descriptions. There are 28 different mindsets that are listed here, and they contrast with each other. Time to cast away stones, a time to gather them. Time to embrace, a time to refrain. A time to get, and a time to lose. Time to keep, and a time to cast away. A rend, or to sow. To keep silence, versus a time to speak. A time to love, time to hate. One thing that's appropriate to hate is to hate evil. A time of war, not that God authorizes that, but He allows it. But we live in a time of war and rumors of war. That's part of the world that we live in a time of peace. Those are penetrating observations. And in all of the stages of life, these different ranges of emotion and experiences can be part of the human experience for us. But again, we must learn with humility and wisdom to accept the limitations which the seasons of life bring to us. And here in chapter 3, and back to verse 1, it says, "To everything there is a season, a time, and to every purpose under heaven." God could have deliberately created us so that we would all live to 300 years of age and never have the first ailment. Or He could have skipped youth and made us all 40 years of age or 70 years of age, and that's where we would start out. But He chose to do it in the way that it is. We find it. There are advantages to be utilized at every season of our lives. It's a shame when we waste any of those seasons, and a blessing when we take advantage of what's available at each season. But the beautiful thing with the plan of God is, and God's relationship with all of us, is even if we waste a season, we are able to have a relationship with God, and He can say, "Let's just bury the past. I forgive for whatever sin is involved, if there is, or just poor choices maybe. That's in the past. Proactively, where do we go from here?" And God will be with us, and He wants to bless us for the rest of our time, for the remainder of the seasons that we have in front of us. And it is just a wonderful situation that we have where God is behind us. But there is a purpose at every age, and a purpose for the challenges at every age. As I already mentioned, in places like Vermont or in other areas in the north, especially where you had contrasting seasons, you know, there were things to be careful about, things to plan for, anticipate, danger with weather or other conditions that you had to take into account in order to plan. Well, it's true with human beings, with their own lives. God has made so many activities, so many events, and so many emotions in our lives. They are all seasonal. You don't necessarily experience each emotion all at once. But as we allow God to lead us and mold us through these events, we'll find, as Solomon says in chapter 3 and verse 11, He has made everything beautiful in His time. Life is beautiful the way God has designed it. And the joys, the experiences that we can have are absolutely wonderful. And we don't want to waste the opportunity that we have. The first season there is the season of youth. A season of youth. In Ecclesiastes chapter 9, Ecclesiastes chapter 9 and verse 11, I returned and saw under the sun that the race is not to the... I'm not sure if that's exactly the verse I want. I'll find it later. But it talks about rejoicing, O man, in your youth. And that is so appropriate, man, woman. The fact that the health is generally there to be able to expand, to study, to travel, to learn. God wants our youth to have as many positive experiences as available. He avails. Camps, travel, the feasts, the winter weekends, possibly, educational opportunities. And we have with the church youth corps, and they're opening up additional slots where people can, that are still young and can travel and have some flexibility to go to places like Kenya and to help. We're now in Guatemala. There's some opportunities and slots to help with some agrarian projects and opportunities around the world. These are things that could be maybe accessed by people that are no longer in the season of youth, as long as they're mentally that way. But still, these are wonderful opportunities. But God wants us to do that. And you may be able to do that on your own, various things. It's a great time to get a passport. You never know when you might need it. And God wants our youth to have fun. Absolutely. He's all for that. Now, He doesn't want people to experience what is not fun. What true joy is something that's fun today, that is still fun tomorrow and the next day and next month. He wants us to have fun, and lots of it, but He wants us to do it His way, not in Satan's way, of course. And I think we all understand that. And so in Ecclesiastes chapter 9 and verse 10 and 11, here he says, and this is true at any age, but as we start to learn how to live life as youngsters, whatsoever your hand finds to do, do it with your might. For there is no work, and there is no device or knowledge or wisdom in the grave where we go. So we're on course for that. And just so that we appreciate life and realize that we're not bionic, says, I return, verse 11, saw under the sun, the race is not always to the swift, or the battle to the strong, neither the bread to the wise, nor yet riches to men of understanding, nor yet favor to men of skill, but time and chance happens to them all. And things can happen quickly and turn around. We can have reverses in our lives. But over and all, God has a season of youth that He doesn't want us to miss out on. And it's a blessing. Youth and health give us that opportunity to do things. Now, a lot of people think at that age, you know what? I know I'm human, but I'm probably going to live forever. I'll never get old. Never. I can just keep going and going. And they do keep going and going. They can work two jobs. They can stay up all night and keep on going at least for a while. Catch up on sleep later. It's an exciting time, and there are important decisions to be made. We've always encouraged our youth to get their education, try to determine from vocational testing and all where they want to be, so that they can go there, that they can achieve their dreams, that they can have goals. And we've encouraged that, and we'll always want to be on record. It's trying to help foster them, help them to reach They've got the intelligence, they've got the time, they've got the energy, they have their health. And so it is a wonderful, wonderful season to take advantage of. It's not a time to become a hermit, not a time to become a recluse or to be disenchanted with life or with education. I remember the university that I attended years ago, that there were quite a few people that were just jaded and disenchanted with life and looking to drugs and other avenues for answers. They were troubled people. And yet they should have been living on a mountain of joy. There is so much opportunity still, and especially in this country, and even with the economy, there's always room for good people, for people that have education and opportunity to be able to develop. Well, that's going to be true even at any age, but the season of youth affords that. And there's nothing really to hold a youth back from advancing oneself. There's a proverb over chapter 24 and verse 27, which speaks to this. It says, "Prepare your work without and make it fit for yourself in the field, and afterwards build your house." Now, this was written to an agrarian-minded audience. And so, in agrarian terms, if a person wanted to have a family and wanted to have a farm or whatever, first he'd save his money, he would buy the land, he would figure out what would be appropriate, and he would find out what work would fit for him or her. And then afterwards, after that, laying that foundation, then build the house. Now, we've said in modern vernacular that even if so many haven't done this, and God can work that out anyway, the best way to fulfill Proverbs 24, verse 27, as we go on through life and develop relationships, that we should go in the following sequence: dating, love, marriage, sex, in that order. And even if that's not done correctly, God can still work it out where people of all ages can still cash in on the wonderful blessings of the various ages, the various seasons which God makes us available. So one of the most wonderful advantages one can have is one's health. And generally speaking, the younger generation has it. But it's a time to be cautious. It's time to be careful. There are so many different avenues that one can take, so many different courses one can take. Choices, places to live, people to know. And we have to choose our friends carefully. And as one sign said that was on the Trans-Alaskan Highway, his big sign says, "Choose your rut carefully, because for the next 200 miles, you'll have to drive in it." So that'd be fine. You know, when it comes to having God in one's life, he says in Matthew 11, at the end of that chapter, he says, "You know, my yoke is easy, my burden is light." The only time it's heavy is when we're fighting against God, kicking against the pricks, trying to go in a right way that God says, don't go that way. Then we have some difficulties. But when we're in harmony with God, or we say, "Look, I want you to be in charge of my life. I want you to be my silent partner. I want you to help me. Help everyone else, but I want you to remember me too, because I need your help. I don't want to be out here on my own." And God just will respond to a prayer like that. Surely He will. And so we want to make sure we, and in the most important decisions of our life, future baptism, a commitment to God, future marriage, that, and future employment. That phrase, you know, "be all that you can be," you know, has an appropriate ring to it when we realize that we at this age can write our own ticket in life. Really, we can. A lot of people sit back and they think, "Well, I've got to wait for my ship to come in. I've got to wait for the government to do something. I've got to wait for I don't know, mom and dad to do it for me," or whatever it is. It's all out there for anybody. At that season, there are the most opportunities that one can find. And Mr. Armstrong talked about he loved to be with young people. It kept him young. And he said, you know, that the youth could employ the 7 laws of success that he had arranged or discovered, and that they could do whatever they wanted. What are the 7 laws of success? Does anybody remember? Anybody? We used to... Education. Goals. Persistence. Right goal.
Records.
Almost. Resourcefulness. Somebody said the easiest way to remember them is the phrase, "Get Elvis Presley's hound dog record soon." Get Elvis Presley's hound dog record soon. Now, you probably remember that. Get, G, that's goals. Elvis, E, education. P, persistence, perseverance, third. Presley's hound, health. Dog, drive. Record, resourcefulness, soon. The spiritual element of having God as your partner, for example, in tithing. You know, if you put Him first, honor God with your first fruits. Proverbs 3, He'll be your partner. You can have all that working for you. Everybody should be a success in life. Sometimes we get, you know, down about maybe the economy, and yes, that's a real factor. That's true. But we still have a lot to say about how we end up. And the younger we are, the easier and more wide open it is, especially in this country. In other countries, it's the pressure's there. Like in Germany, by the time you're 14, you have got to figure out whether you're going to be in a vocational school or whether you're going to be headed for being a doctor or an attorney or whatever it is. And that's tough. And a lot of people are forced into decision-making that they are not able to do. And a lot of people end up in the wrong fields. In this country, I still love it. I remember I was 16. I was a surveyor's assistant. And the person says, "What do you want to do in life?" I said, "Well, I want to be the associate pastor of Tampa, Florida." Now, I didn't know where Tampa was. I said, "I don't know." He says, "Well, don't worry." He says, "I'm 45 and I don't know what I want to do." And I thought, wow, only in the USA. You know, you can change courses. You can do different things. And I'll get to middle age in a minute. But everybody has a chance to be a success. And when people are young, it's wide open. And for all of us that are older than that, you know, we should just take an interest in people once in a while. "How are you doing? That's great. You're going for that other language or this other degree or whatever. Fantastic. You know, go as far as you can. Don't forget us, but we're behind you. We're behind you." Now, there are dangers at that age. A lot of people like to follow the crowd. We have to be strong enough to resist it. One of the biggest weaknesses with the youth, the youngest generation, and we've noticed this somewhat in the church, and it's true in society, especially Generation X and younger now, Y, is that a lot of people have a difficult time being able to think as individuals. That's more for the baby boom generation and older people. And by that I mean, a lot of times people think, well, if the crowd chooses to do this, that's my choice. If the crowd turns around and goes here, that's my choice. And that's very shallow. And so what I appeal to our youth is prove what's worth doing and be committed to it whether everybody else goes the same way or not. If everybody else thinks that marijuana and LSD is the right way to go, is that going to sway you? Well, it shouldn't. If everybody thinks that going into debt for huge expenses some expensive toys that are here today and gone tomorrow, if everybody's convinced that's what we have to do, doesn't mean that you have to. If everybody in your high school has a car, it doesn't mean you have to have one. If it makes sense, maybe for work or whatever, that might be different. But a lot of people will just do things to follow the crowd. And they have the sheep instinct. You can think of a cartoon, The Far Side. There, it was a drinking establishment. They're all sheep in there, guzzling down beers. And one says to the other, "Well, isn't that something? So you're a sheep too. You're a follower too, huh?" Well, that's the way a lot of people are. It doesn't have to be that way. Okay. There's a biblical analogy in there somewhere, I'm sure. Anyway, it's important to be individualistic, to be able to stand on your own feet, make your own decisions when that's appropriate. Of course, you want those decisions to be decisions that God can endorse. But it'd be a shame to be young and healthy and not take advantage of the opportunities there. And let's, as youth, resolve not to waste those opportunities. And if we are in harmony with God, there's just not going to be the wear and tear that there is for a lot of people. Some people resist God because that's an interruption they think of their life. They think there's more fun away from God. Well, they obviously don't know who God is. And hopefully we study to see that He's not against having fun. He's not against blessing people. He's for that. Now, He invented youth. He invented that season. It's something to take advantage of. And something, and the rest of us that are not in that season, I don't think this is an issue, but sometimes people can be then prejudiced against the youth. Now, what's wrong with the younger generation? Mr. Armstrong showed an article to us, "What's Wrong with the Younger Generation," and that was written in 1930. And what was wrong with Mr. Oldroyd's generation? Because it was talking about him and those people. No, it's relative. Sometimes we can be jealous, maybe, of those that have wide open opportunity. We should be very supportive of them. You know, we were young just a few seconds ago. And now it's different. And anyway, it's just a very special time of life. And if you're a youth, just count your blessings. You have a whole world in front of you. And regardless of what happens in the tribulation, you have a chance to just develop your skills and abilities and have huge responsibilities and perhaps a corresponding income for the many years that follow. God's way works. And there's never a time that God shortchanges His people. Let's move on to the middle season, the season of middle age. I met a person down in the Fort Lauderdale area recently, and he was very, very dejected. He says, "My life is a waste. I'm 40 years of age." He says, "I've lost all my investments. I was engaged multiple times, got to the altar each time practically, and it fizzled. And I'm lonely, and there have been some losses in my extended family, and I don't like what's happened. I'm disgusted with my life. I shouldn't have done this, shouldn't have done that, shouldn't have done this, shouldn't have done that." And I said, "Well, that's really great news." And he looks at me, he says, "What are you talking about?" I said, "You have finally reached the point. You were old enough to understand what went wrong, and you're young enough still to achieve your dreams." That's one of the blessings of middle age. What's the best time to sell somebody life insurance? When they're 20 and they think they'll never die? I remember I was 10 one time. I watched this program on TV where a guy did a backflip. I never dreamed of doing something like that. And I saw him do it, so I did it. And I did it, but it was the first time I ever experienced back pain. This is not according to the script. It's not supposed to happen this way. But, I mean, foolishness can be bound up in a little person. And I didn't know. I didn't understand. But here, you know, when you get to be in middle age, you realize, wow, I'm 40 years old, or let's say I'm 45, and let me double that. And Maybe is my life half over? There's some people that resist getting old. I resist accepting it. As one person said, I resisted it when I was 60, but then I doubled my age and I realized that I don't see too many 120-year-old people walking around. What does this do? It helps. It says, wow, half my life's gone maybe. I got to rethink this. I got to get more out of life. I need to quit wasting time. I need to get serious. Brian Tracy is a famous philosopher and a business advisor, and he did a study on millionaires. And he wanted to find out what the common denominators were with all the different people that had, quote-unquote, made it in life. And he said, invariably, there was one common denominator that it seemed to dwarf all others into insignificance. And there were other significant ones, really, but one in particular. And people, one after another, would say, when did I start to really get successful? It was when I got serious about it. When I said enough was enough. When I said to myself, this has gone on long enough. I've dabbled around. I'm going to get serious. I'm going to get organized. I'm going to have my goals. I'm going to get this straightened out. I'm going to see this project to its conclusion. I'm going to get serious. There are a lot of people that decide to get serious. And that's where middle age can be such a blessing. You have a perspective that you didn't have before. It's a special season. A season to develop. A season to rethink. You realize, I don't want to work harder. I want to think smarter. You know, no wasted motion. The pro, the professional athlete, or the professional businessman doesn't waste unnecessary time. Doesn't get caught up in extraneous communication when time is money, for example, on the job. So it is valuable to be in middle age. Other people fear it. It's like, oh no, I could get old. Do you know why Harley Davidson is falling on hard times? Motorcycle people? Let me preface this by saying that there's nothing wrong with having a motorcycle at any age, if you're wearing a helmet. Nothing wrong with that. That might be your special opportunity. We have a guy in Miami, he says, man, the weather's getting really nice, and there's nothing like getting out on this wide-open country lane and opening it up and just soaring down this highway. Well, Harley-Davidson's biggest market are middle-aged men. The average person to buy a Harley-Davidson is a man, age 48, that's going through a midlife crisis. No. And doesn't want to accept the fact. And he's going to prove to himself, prove to the world, he's different, he's young, he's ready for, some excitement. Easy rider, reincarnated. So that's his opportunity. I'm going to show him. I'm a young moose. I'm going to get that cycle. Well, the baby boomers are getting past that age. And so there are just fewer millions of people that are part of that market. And so there are few people. Now, they sell to all ages. But this is a typical thing that some people will go through a midlife crisis. And it's ridiculous because they're wasting. They're wasting the season. Now, it's a time when you either may encounter some limitations or there's the hint of limitations, maybe around the corner. And I understand it's not always easy to accept. I'll never forget. Sometimes when I'd finish work, I would, go to a park, run, or maybe get into a pickup basketball game. So I'm at this park one time. There's 9 other guys, and they're shooting hoops. So I went over, and I'm shooting with them, and so we're going to have a game. So it was time to divvy up the sides. And I was beyond 50 at the time. And for the second time in my life, I remembered what age discrimination was. The first time was when I was 10, and my older cousin said I was 7. And he was 10. He told me I was too little to stay up past 7 p.m., which is cruel and unusual punishment. And I'll never forget that. It's an emotional scar, yeah. And anyway, sick. I just said sorry. What I also experienced was the second experience of age discrimination, when they had to have a 10th person, and they're picking up teams for this basketball thing. And I brought this thing up to make sure I don't go over time. As a result, I was going to be on the, you know, in the game, but nobody wanted me on their team. So it was because of my color. I had a few white hairs right here. Well, when this one kid said, "You can have the old man," I thought, "I'm going to shut this turkey down. I'm on him like white on rice. I'm going to block every shot and so forth." And I did. I did. I stole the ball. I blocked his shots. He couldn't do a thing. As the vernacular goes, the street talk, I got a piece of him. I got a couple pieces of him. And it was sweet. And when I got a little tired, I thought, old man, huh? Old man, yeah. And then I started hitting the perimeter shots. Whew! These flamethrowers, boom, boom. I got a whole about four in a row. And we buried them. We buried them. And it was so fun. And then I thought at the end, you know what? You know, you can't let people of third year age get inside your head like that. I thought, too, you just can't go bowling people over in life. It's just ridiculous. You have to realize, speaking maturely, there's always somebody that's taller, faster, more clever, more cunning than you are. It always is that way. So I thought to myself, well, I just got to let this kind of thing go. I thought it was amusing at the time that I scored these points. He didn't get a single point. And our team won. But you know what? Sooner or later, we all get older. And sooner or later, they're right. And sooner or later, you know, we do have limitations. It's possible to take care of oneself and extend the seasons, but there is a time appointed once for everyone to die, in Hebrews 9:27. So there, opportunity still exists. I mean, take Colonel Sanders. He launched the Kentucky Fried Chicken chain when he was 67 years of age. In this country, there's so much opportunity to still do a lot. It may not be as easy. You may need to be self-employed to write some of those dreams, but it is still within our grasp. Now, if we have the maturity, and I'm not terribly proud of that little basketball incident. After all, I am in the church. But anyway, having a relationship, inviting God to be in your middle age, to help inspire your thinking and to refine your goals, really, really can make a world of difference in one's life. It's a great time to be. It's a wonderful time to be 45 or 38 or 55. It's nothing to dread, really. I mean, there's still opportunity, and you still have the wherewithal, the health to do a lot. And you have a chance to learn from the past, to analyze, you know, I'm not going to go down that one road, or that was kind of a waste. Why don't I do this? Then I can still accomplish the same thing. Or I still have my parents, maybe, most of us. I still have my kids. I still can, you know, pull things together, and there are a lot of people that do. And imagine going to God and asking for His help. This is a great season. It's something to take advantage of. Let's move on to the twilight years, the golden years. It says in Proverbs 16, verse 31, Proverbs 16 and verse 31, "The hoary head is a crown of glory, if it be found in the way of righteousness. If it be found in the way of righteousness. I don't imagine people with hoary heads that come here or in any other congregation are thinking, I'm just putting logging in time. No, they're in pursuit, as all of us hopefully are, of righteousness. And so age can be a great asset. It can be a wonderful blessing. One of the elderly can be advisors. They are a wealth of information. They all have stories. They've done things the right way, the wrong way, in between, every which way. And they're still able to talk about it. And they're a wealth of information. I remember in a congregation out west where I was, I was amazed at this one person who was 80-some-odd years of age and in robust health. He had rosy cheeks. He was just full of energy, just pulsated energy. And I was 20-something, and I decided, you know what? There's a story behind that. There's a reason. And I took a notepad, and I went over to his home and asked him I prearranged it. And I wanted to ask him what he knew, if it were possible, because it was, you know, health at a young age could be accidental, could be heredity that makes that happen. But when somebody is on in years and they have that going for them, there are reasons. And sure enough, he had a ton of information that he shared with me that I thought was incredibly important. And I wanted to pattern my life the way he was doing his. And so that was a very positive experience. There are any number of people that if you get to know them, you'll find out that they were entrepreneurs, inventors, people that had incredible skills and had an extraordinary responsibility with the government or with other corporations that maybe traveled internationally that have done things. And it's there to be accessed. It's like getting a computer and you find out, oh, I can go on internet and I can learn all kinds of things. Well, you've got your own internet network right here. There are people that have been down that road that maybe you're deciding to walk on, and if you could find out what they would know, or maybe they could help you or give you an additional idea. I remember some time ago, might be worth doing again, one youth Bible study that I had. We were talking about life in that, and I had four different couples that were past the age of 60 or 70, I think, and we would interview them, you know, as far as marriage. When did you get married? How much money did you have in the bank? What were the things that you were glad that you did? What should have, maybe, if you had to do it over again, what would you have done, and so forth? Did you ever have any problems? You know, these people have been married 50 years now, some of them. And they said, yes, every one of them, every couple. They had some thorns, but we worked through it. Or, you know, we couldn't have afforded to go separate ways or whatever it was. Anyway, there's a wealth of information. There's no sense in reinventing the wheel. In 1 Timothy 5 is a statement that rings out. The Apostle Paul was talking about let's go to Titus first. Titus, right after Timothy. Titus chapter 2, verses 3 and 4. Titus 2, verses 3 and 4. Here it says, the aged women likewise that they should... start in the first verse. But speak you the things which become sound doctrine, that the aged men be sober, grave, temperate, sound in faith and charity and patience. The aged women likewise, that they may be in behavior as becomes holiness, not false accusers, not given to much wine. That all of those things can be factors for some. And it's something to be on guard against at any age, including the twilight years. Verse 4, that they might teach the younger women to be sober, to love their husbands, to love their children, to be discreet, chaste, and keepers in home, good, obedient to their husbands. And this is not some male chauvinistic system, but to help to make family work optimally, that they can make contributions like that. That they can show other people that are younger. We have not historically taken full advantage of this, but there is a wealth of information. It's interesting, some people in their twilight years were in such heavy demand, such as Daniel the prophet. When Darius came and took over Babylon, he had to find this man. And finally, face to face, are you that Daniel, that same one that had been the Bernard Baruch of the past and advised various kings and so forth? I need you in my kingdom. I want to put you in charge of a huge segment of responsibility because your work record speaks so loudly. And you never should discount age. There was a person in New York City that was fired from his job. He was 70 years old, and they said that he was no longer needed. Too old. Age discrimination. So what did he do? He hired an attorney, age 89. They went to court, and they won their case. They won $1 million settlement that he got. So he was called old man once too often. And so they paid a price. At any rate, there is a wealth of information. Now, at that age, not many, certainly very rare in the church, but some can feel dejected, feel lonely, and, detached. This is wonderful to have a family of people of all ages, where instead of feeling detached, you have friends, you have connections, you can help other people. One of the most enormous assets that the elderly have is time, discretionary time. Time is golden. You know, it's sometimes said, if you don't have your health, then what do you have? Well, if you don't have time, you can argue the same thing. Now, there are examples such as Anna, who is well over 100 years of age, who served God with fasting and prayer, and she prayed for a ton of important, responsible decisions to be made in the early New Testament church and with Christ himself and other activity. There are other elderly people that made a mark in life and were a blessing to the church and to serving God. And so we never want to discount that. Time is a wonderful resource. And I've had different people say, well, I don't know why God would want me, still alive. I'm just feeble and so forth. And I tell them, you are a resource. And you've got the time and you can make things happen. Because God a lot of times predicates that next super TV station that we might contract for, or some other success in a public Bible lecture, may say, I have it in mind to do these things, but I'm going to hold it back. Do I see enough people caring about it? Are they praying about it? And are those that have more time, are they helping to shoulder that responsibility? And at an older age, as well as at a younger age, is possible to serve God in prayer. Maybe occasional fasting if health permits. It's a time of opportunity. It's a time to make things happen, make a difference. And when there are successes in the church, our people can take credit for God gets the credit, but they had a part to play in it. That's what Mr. Armstrong said. He said, I remember sitting in his home the one time I got to go there. He said, I know that I didn't do any of this. I didn't build this work. I'd like to think I had something to do with it, but God gets all the credit. So it's faith and works. Yes, God can complete a work, but he's looking to the people that he called to care about it and to be emotionally and prayerfully involved in it. And all that's true for all of us, but for those that have even additional time, it's an area to serve. It's an area to help. It's opportunity when there may not be time, may not be opportunity because of health limitations, but there are no time limitations. So that can be a fantastic blessing. So it's all of the different seasons. We have to have our mind on God and not on ourselves, or else we can fall prey to pity and to destructive behavior. Now, in Ecclesiastes chapter 12, we can read what is also oftentimes in store for the human condition as we continue to live. More than one person has made the statement, old age is not for sissies. And that's very true. In Ecclesiastes chapter 12 and verse 1. I'd like to read the following. It's chapter 12 and verse 1. It says, "Remember now your Creator in the days of your youth, or in the days of middle age, that season, or in the days of old. Remember you now your Creator in the days of your youth, while the evil days have not yet come, or the difficult, challenging days, nor the years draw close, when you shall say, I have no pleasure in them." And that has happened to some people. I was in a nursing home. I remember when I was 20-some years of age, talking to a widow who was 95, and I was trying to encourage her. And I said, "Well, I hope I get to be 95 sometime. I'm thinking that I could live a long life," in other words. And I was trying to validate her at her age. That's what I was trying to do. And she took offense and she says, "Oh, don't ever hope for such a thing." And I thought, why? But then I thought later, well, perhaps that was insensitive, because she was in aches and pains and just didn't have a family or friends. And so she was just enduring life. And it was sad that, for instead of a season of opportunity, that it was a season that she was squandering away. But it's easy for me to say, well, she shouldn't be that way. But I'm not in her shoes. And it was very difficult. And she was experiencing what we can read about as follows. It says, "Remember your Creator while these our challenges of older age are not upon us. While the verse 2, while the sun or the light or the moon or the stars be not darkened." In other words, a reference to dimming eyesight. Verse 3, "In the day when the keepers of the house shall tremble, and the strong men shall bow themselves with weaker bodies, maybe a weak heart, and a trembling. And then the grinders shall cease, because they are few." That's teeth. You know, where do they go? "And those that look out of the windows be darkened, the door be shut in the streets, when the sound of grinding is low," loss of hearing. "And he shall rise up at the voice of the bird, and the daughters of the music shall be brought very low." As if there's an irony that one can't hear that well, and yet sometimes you think you hear things, or maybe faint noises, and they can wake you up because you're sleeping lightly and you're just not getting enough sleep. And so there are all these different conditions. In verse 5, it talks about the almond tree that shall flourish. And that's talking about the hoary head. "And desire shall fail, libido disappears." From what we understand with the medical or science, that it's possible for people to revitalize some of these losses with the quality nutrition, but still, it doesn't change the end result. We're not going to live for eternity in the future. So what can happen, at least with some of us, is that we can be born and we're young and we're racing, and then suddenly middle age, and then that dissipates, and then we're older, and then we have these difficulties and these ailments, and then the resurrection. Then 1 Corinthians 15. Then corruption puts on incorruption. Then we, when we are resurrected, we have all the advantages of all of the seasons. We can feel youth. We can have experience of the older years. We can be old enough to understand what's going on and young enough for all of eternity to do whatever we want. So the beauty of all of this is, it's just the beginning. It's just the beginning. When we talk about someone like Charles Oldroyd, his next waking moment is a bionic moment, not a mortality moment. It's having a body that feels great, that can go a million miles an hour, that can race around the universe if need be. God has things for us to do, more responsibility. Suddenly we're responsible for people and cities and then countries and then nations and planets and galaxies. Mr. Gerald Waterhouse talked about various times, and I especially remember a sermon he gave at the feast once in St. Pete. He said, we are on just at the beginning of the beginning of the plan of salvation. There's so much out there, and we're just getting started. And the way it's predicated, a million years into the future, it's going to be the same way. We're going to see so many other things to expand and do. In the increase of God's government, there shall be no end, it says, Isaiah 9. And so it's, wow, after we're only a million years into this, and we're just at the very, very beginning. There's so much to do. And we'll look back and think, wow, this little grease spot of physical life is nothing. And yet, it's very important. Just like we saw earlier, that rut that we choose, that we're going to be in, and we're going to be in for 200 billion miles or longer. And so, how we set our course now, the choices we make, do we want to surrender to God? Do we want God to be part of our life? That's appropriate of all of the ages. That's all of the seasons. And for all of eternity. Johnny Cash, famous singer, toward the very end of his life, wrote a song that he sang. And the lyrics went like this. If I could start my life again, I would find a way, he said. And as he was singing the song on this video, there were flashbacks to his earlier life. When he was young, you see this elderly guy, puffy cheeks from misliving and drugs and other choices that he was regretting. And you see in the background him when he was robust and healthy. And yet it was all about him. It was self-absorbed. Outside of his wonderful, devoted wife, he had nothing, what he looked he was concluding. And he was very frail. And it was like, if I could find a way, you know, it would be different. It would be different. And yet he felt it was all over. He did not know the plan of salvation. Brad Pitt, a multi-millionaire, famous actor, was interviewed recently. And he was asked, what do you think is most important? He says, man, I know all of these things are supposed to seem important to us. The car, the condo, our version of success. But if that is the case, why is the general feeling out there of reflecting more impotence and isolation, despair and loneliness? He says, if you ask me, I say toss it. We got to find something else. But I know at this point in time we are headed for a dead end, a numbing of the soul, a complete atrophy from the spiritual being, and I don't want that. So the interviewer says, well, what do you suggest? Hey, man, he says, I don't have the answers yet. The emphasis is now on success and personal gains. Smile. I'm sitting on it, and I tell you, that's not it. I'm the guy that's got all the things, but I don't know. I know that that's not all that there is. Yeah. You know, without God, you're a boat without a rudder. Aimless. It doesn't have to be like that. It just doesn't. But for Johnny Cash, for Brad Pitt, at least from that interview, it would appear that they didn't understand what the seasons could be for. They weren't anchored to a God that could help them access the advantages of all of those seasons. So, as we conclude, We need to realize that we are fragile at all ages. We have a mortality, but we know that this is not all that there is in life. That every season, every age has its opportunities. Life ebbs and flows. There's a time to embrace. There's a time for peace. There's a time for all purposes under heaven. And life can have great meaning. It's the meaning of life is made possible by God's Holy Spirit and God's revelation of what's important. And we see in the conclusion of the book of Ecclesiastes a very, very telling conclusion by King Solomon. And it rings and echoes through the generations. So let me read in Ecclesiastes chapter 12. He says in verse 13, "Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God." That means respect God and understand His ways, appreciate Him, and keep His commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. It's the only way that we have spiritual meaning in our lives. It's the only way that the seasons of our lives can have lasting value, that we can look back on them and feel good about them. We don't have to sing, "Oh, if I could only find a way." We know the way. The way is made possible by God and Jesus Christ. We need to develop the relationship that will help bring the greatest meaning in our lives. And it involves being involved with others and serving humanity and expanding the knowledge that we have and the purpose and the gospel message and all of that. It's a wonderful, wonderful purpose. It's the most important purpose that there is. So let's appreciate the seasons and appreciate where we are, no matter what the age is. And know that we can learn from Solomon and learn from life itself and put these seasons to the best possible use and opportunity for all of us.